Hi, welcome to Stalwarts of Music with Aditya Veera, Season 3. I'd like to give a very special shout out to our podcast partner, Perpetual Buzz Experiences. You can feel free to check them out on www.perpetualbuzz.com. Season 3 is taking great shape, and I'm bringing to you some of the best artists in every possible genre, as promised on this planet. Stalwarts of Music with Aditya Veera is doing an Indian album premiere of blues rock's resilient icon, the one and only Walter Trout. He's putting out his 31st album, which is going to be called Broken. This is a deeply personal record featuring guest artists like Beth Hart, Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, and many more. If you happen to be a true fan, you can feel free to pre-order the album on Bandcamp or head out to his website and get some exclusive merchandise ranging from t-shirts to CDs and even signed vinyl copies. Details are mentioned in my description. Guitar legend Scott Henderson has put out his all-new album Carnival, and I'm happy to be promoting this release on my show as well. It's going to be followed by a pre-show concert edition podcast for a show happening at Windmills Bangalore on the 12th and 13th of April, powered by Total Environment Foundation. Don't forget to listen to Carnival and get an autographed CD of the same from the online shop at www.scotthenderson.net. And if you wish to attend the concert happening in Bangalore, head out to the Windmill website and you will find your tickets to the show. Speaking of my guest today, he's none other than Walter Trout. He's a renowned American blues rock guitar player and a singer who's been a prominent figure in the music scene for several decades now. In the mid-80s, Walter Trout gained recognition for his guitar skills during his time with John Mayall's Blues Breakers, but he's built a substantial solo career post that since 1989, and he's marked by his commitment to his song crafting and reaching for greater truths in music. He's received numerous awards and accolades for several years now, which includes recognition at ceremonies such as Blues Music Awards, the Senna European Guitar Awards, British Blues Awards, and the Blues Blast Music Awards. He is collaborating with noteworthy musicians like Beth Hart and Dee Snider, which showcases his versatility and willingness to explore different musical styles on his all-new album, Broken. The guitarist is known for his dedication to growth and still remains hungry for artistic contributions. He expresses a desire to be a vital and evolving artist rather than dwelling solely on past glory. His music often delves into personal struggles, societal issues, and reflections on the world, which makes him a respected and influential figure in the blues music genre. So without any further ado, I'm delighted to welcome my guest for today, Walter Trout.
Hey, everybody. This is Walter Trout here coming to you from beautiful Huntington Beach, California, and you are listening to Stalwarts of Music.
Hi, Walter. Namaste. Welcome to Stalwarts of Music with Aditya Veera. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
It is great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Where are you right now? And I see a very beautiful library behind you.
Well, I am in my house that I share with my family. I'm in Huntington Beach, California, which is about 40 miles south of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And we're just a couple of blocks away from the beautiful Pacific Ocean. I like being by the ocean.
So can you see the ocean from your window?
We can't see it, but on a quiet night, you can lay in bed with the window open and you can hear the waves.
Lovely. What a pristine sight to have right across your window. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. So what are your plans on a Monday morning? What do you have as part of your agenda?
Oh, man, it's just, you know, I'm going to talk to you for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to have some breakfast because it's 9:45 here in the morning. And I'm on rock and roll time, of course. So I just got up a little while ago.
Okay.
Then I'm going to go take care of some business. I have to register my car. I have to do some just mundane, regular, everyday stuff, you know. Yep. And I will probably also play my guitar for an hour or two.
Lovely, lovely. Any new music or any new tour coming up for you?
Well, you know, I have an album, a brand new album called Broken. And I'm not sure when this is going to be broadcast. When will this
be? I did go through the album. In fact, someone from your team did share the music with me. I got to listen to some of the songs, and we will be talking about the album during the course of our interview as we progress. So I have some very, very interesting questions coming your way as part of this new incredible record that you put out.
Well, like I said, I have this new album.
Yeah.
And then I have a very, very heavy touring schedule this year. I'm going to be touring like constantly, and I'm going to be 73 years old here in a couple of weeks. And I got to say, I feel young. I feel great. I'm in really good health, and I'm ready to go out and tour and play the new songs. And I'm very excited about life, man. It's great to be still alive, you know?
Sounds very exciting. Like you said, I can see that I can still see the youth in you, you know, in terms of this exciting tour that is coming up, and in terms of the whole idea of music. That being said, I have a very interesting agenda planned as part of our interview. Shall we get started?
Yeah, let's do it, Adi.
Alrighty. So what is it about music that you find meaningful, that you find substantive? Is it a process of catharsis that you have in terms of emotions, insights, and responses that you want to express? Why do you create music?
Man, that's a great question. I can tell you that from the time I was a little kid, I feel like all my life, I've sort of been overdosing with emotions. I can see a bird flying in the sky, and the transcendental beauty of it will make me break down and weep. And I've been that way since I was a little boy. And when I was a kid, I wish I was not so emotional about stuff, you know. But as I discovered music, and I found music when I was 5 or 6 years old, and I became a trumpet player, and I studied the trumpet. And I played it all through school. I played in the orchestra and the marching band. I was a trumpet player, and I was very good at it, I thought. But I found it's a way of expressing a feeling, of expressing who you are, where you cannot find the words. The words are not enough. And music is a language, I believe.
Okay.
And it is a beautiful, beautiful, to me, it's my favorite of all the arts. I love all the arts, but music goes deep. If you open your heart and listen, it goes very deep inside of you.
From whatever you said, I gathered the whole idea that your response to music is definitely coming from an emotional sense. So would it be right to consider you as an emotional music than someone who's more cerebral?
Yes, of course. I'm sort of not interested in, it's just actually, let me start again. This is just me. Everybody doesn't have to be like this, but what I look for in music or in any art is the emotional part of it, the expressive part of it. What does it feel like to be a human being and to struggle in your life? Everybody struggles, whether they're rich or poor. You know, everybody has things that have happened to them when they're kids. Everybody has feelings and has heart and soul. And that's what I look for in any art. I can tell you that Vincent van Gogh, the great painter, his brother, when Vincent was in a seminary and he was going to become a preacher, a minister, you know, he was going to become a clergyman in the church, and he decided to quit and be an artist. And his brother wrote him a letter and said, "Why do you want to be an artist?" And he wrote him back one sentence that said, "To express an honest human emotion." And that really, to me, is what I'm interested in any art. And that is what really kind of led me to the blues originally. It's not about technique. It's not about your brain. It's about your heart.
Mm. As a musician, like you said, you know, you like expressing things that you see around you in its real form. So as a musician, do you find it that it's your duty to express reality and the truth as it is?
Well, I don't think of it as a duty. You know, I think of it as my need, what gives me a feeling that my life has value and my life has worth, is that I can express my feelings. And maybe someone can listen to it and it can make them feel something. You know, does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Certainly.
I don't think of it as a duty. I think of it as my calling. This is why I was put here.
Correct. Interesting. I mean, the way you look at it, right? Like you rightly mentioned, you kind of were born into this, right? Like you say that I was a born person to, you know, make music. I was born in this world on a mission, and my mission inadvertently was to make some beautiful music and, you know, make people smile or make people in a blissful state of mind.
Yes. And it's not just always to make them smile. Maybe it's to make them think a little bit. Maybe it's to make them cry a little bit.
Mm.
I can tell you, I was out on the pier yesterday down at the beach.
Okay.
And there was a man with playing electric guitar. And he was just strumming along, and I stood and I looked at the sunshine and I looked at the beach and I looked at the people and I thought about life and I thought about the world. And I stood there and the man's music made me start weeping like a baby. And I was standing on the pier crying, listening to this guy who was busking, you know, and I thought his music was beautiful. He was just strumming chords.
Lovely.
But it's the human condition, man.
Yeah. Of course, as any artist or any human being would go through, they would go through a lot of ups and downs. So I'd like to understand, what difficulties do artists face when they're trying to make a name for themselves, balancing their unique style and living up to the expectations of the public eye? So what was it like for someone like you?
Man, that is a great question. I have to say, I'm very lucky in that if I was trying to start out now, I think it's very different than when I started out, because I started out in the middle 60s. I started playing in bars in like 1968, 1969. Yeah. And at that time, all I wanted to do was be on a stage and play to somebody. And I didn't care if there were three people there or if there were 10,000 people there. And in some ways, I'm still exactly the same. I just want to play and try to communicate with somebody and try to establish connection. But I was very lucky in that, you know, I was playing in bars and bands and doing cover music back then. And it was the late 60s. So I was, we were playing Beatles and Rolling Stones. And then every once in a while, I would throw in a Muddy Waters song or B.B. King song. And I just happened to be at the right place at the right time and got into John Lee Hooker's band.
Yeah.
And from John Lee Hooker's band, I was able to go from one band to the next. I was playing with John Lee Hooker and Big Mama Thornton and Percy Mayfield and Lowell Fulsom and Eddie Cleanhead Vincent and Joe Tex. But when I was with Hooker, I got heard by the guys from Canned Heat. And they invited me to join their band. And then when I was with Canned Heat, we opened up for John Mayall.
Yeah.
And he asked me to join his band. So I was very lucky in that it was very different back then. I think now a cool thing that young musicians have is the internet. They can get their music up there and they're not so dependent on trying to find a record label and getting a record out there. Now it's all about streaming and all that stuff. But so as far as trying to get somewhere today, I'm not the guy to talk about it because I've been very lucky. This new album of mine is album number 31 for me. So I've been at it for a while.
Yeah, you know? Several decades, I can see. Yeah. You did mention John Mayall. So could you describe the exact sequence of events when you met John Mayall for the very first time? What were some of the interesting sights and exchanges during the course of this this rendezvous with him?
That was an awesome experience. Let me go back through time and tell you that a lot of my musical education and people that I was influenced by, I have an older brother who was a music fan, and he kept bringing home records. Great. And when I was about 12 years old, my brother brought home a record, and he said, "Here's this British guy. You've got to hear him." Mm-hmm. And it was John Mayall, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was a fan of Mr. Mayall since I was 12 years old. Well, when I was in Canned Heat, this would have been 1981, John Mayall had put together the original Blues Breakers with Mick Taylor and John McVie and Colin Allen. And they were touring in America, and Canned Heat was booked to do three shows opening up for the original Blues Breakers. And I was just like, wow, I'm going to get to hear John Mayall live. And I had actually seen John Mayall in Philadelphia the night that Jimi Hendrix died. And John Mayall came out and announced, I'm sorry to tell you this, I just heard that Jimi Hendrix died. I actually heard that from Mr. Mayall at a gig. I was in the audience. Okay. And, but so Canned Heat played. And as soon as we came off the stage, Mr. Mayall came up to me and said, "Hi, I'm John, and I love the way you play the guitar."
Wow.
And so I listened to their band, and after the gig, John and I sat down at a table, and we were both drinking then. So we sat down and had a couple of drinks together, and we just became great friends from the very first meeting. We became great friends, and at the end of those three shows, Mr. Mayall, I still call him Mr. Mayall, even though he's my dear friend and I think of him as a father, but my respect is he's Mr. Mayall. Mr. Mayall said to me, "Well, what are you doing now? Is Canned Heat touring?" And I said, "No, Canned Heat has like, we have 4 months off." And he said, "Well, why don't you come out on tour with me? And I'd like to hear you play guitar with Mick Taylor." So there I was, out on tour in California with the original Blues Breakers, who I had heard when I was 12 years old. And I was playing guitar, second guitar to Mick Taylor. And I did a bunch of shows around California. And then you know, they went off to Australia and I stayed home. But so that was my first meeting with John. And we became great friends then, and we still are. I was recently, just a month ago, I was at his 90th birthday party at his house.
Wow. How is he doing?
Well, he's doing great. You know, he has, he's 90 years old, so his memory is not what it used to be, and he's retired.
Okay.
But he still loves music, and he's still a great man, and he's still got one of the best sense of humor. He is his funniest person, and he is some of the most fun I've ever had in my life was being out on tour with John Mayall.
Incredible. Must have been surreal, right? Like, you've from the age of 12, you've been listening to Mr. Mayall, and finally you get to play with him. It's just a dream come true, right?
Yeah, and I'd like to tell you an interesting story.
Yeah.
Then later, he invited me to join his band. He started a new band.
Okay.
And I had listened to his music so much that I got up on stage with him, and we were doing songs that were from the John Mayall album that he did with Eric Clapton, the Blues Breakers album from 1965. And when he was doing songs like Steppin' Out and Have You Heard, and some of the songs off that record, I played the Eric Clapton solos note for note. I thought that's what he wanted. And I had listened so much, I knew those solos inside and out. And I played all the Eric Clapton solos. And after the gig, he came and he knocked on my door and he said, "Walter, I'm really glad you're here. But if I'd have wanted Eric Clapton, I'd have called him. I want you to play the way you feel it. I want Walter Trout." And he freed me. And I was able to grow musically in his band.
So how did you, after this particular incident, how did you bring in the Walter Trout flavor into his music when you were trying to recreate some of these timeless classics? Usually a lot of fans go by the whole idea of how a classic is interpreted. And how can someone honor the classic the way it is by adding your own flavor to it? How did you go about that process?
Well, here's the thing. That's part of what's called being a side man. The first thing, and I was a very successful side man. I backed up a lot of people. And one of the reasons I think I was successful was I knew that I have to try to tap into, I have to try to understand the music of the leader. And I have to try to see if I can get into their head and into their heart and understand what it is they're trying to express.
All right.
And I have to add my own flavor to that, but I have to still maintain the feeling that they're trying to create. And so as free as I was then to play my own thing, I still had to keep it what I considered. I had to honor the music of the person I was backing up. It's not about showing off.
Correct.
It's not about, hey, look at me. You have to be part of the music of that person. And I was very aware of that the whole time.
Makes sense. Considering, you know, you've also heard them for several years, and it was something that you were possibly, like, you know, exposed to from a very early age, so that also gave you like a little bit of an upper hand in terms of understanding expectations and, you know, molding yourself into that group.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. We did touch upon the emotional element, but I'm also interested in knowing, is there a spiritual element within your work?
It's very much so. Very much so.
Okay.
From the time I was a kid, I've always had this feeling that I was put here for a reason. And I feel like the higher power whatever you want to call the higher power,
yeah,
gave me a gift. And I need, and this is something that Carlos Santana told me too, is if you've been given a gift, you have to take it seriously, you have to nurture it, you have to love it, and you have to humbly share it with the world. And that way you doing your part to make the world a little bit better. And I've always been very aware of the divine.
Okay. So when you say divine, does it take a particular shape or a form for someone like you?
It does, but it's not something, again, I can put into words.
All right.
Maybe you can get it from some of my music.
Mm.
You know, and I can tell you that there are times when I'm playing the guitar that I lose all knowledge of my physical self, and I become the sound. It comes from somewhere else, and it's like I become a radio, and I'm just picking up the signal which is being given to me. And that's a very heavy experience. And I don't know a lot of artists who are atheists, because if they have that experience, they know it's coming from somewhere else.
Sure. But must be incredible to, be in that state of mind, and, being on stage and able to deliver with consistency. That takes a lot to be in that position.
Well, yeah, it does. Yeah. It takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And sometimes if I do 5 or 6 nights in a row out on tour, sometimes I have to work hard to sort of keep up that energy.
Right.
And I really depend on the audience at that point, when the audience gives you that energy.
Yeah.
And then give it back to them, and it becomes this beautiful circular exchange of energy and communication, and at that point we're all one. At that point, when they're there and you're playing to them and they are into what you're doing, it doesn't matter who they vote for, it doesn't matter, none of that matters. You get right down to the human condition, and you're sharing that moment in your common humanity, and it's beautiful.
In between these tours or these recordings, how do you sort of rejuvenate? How do you make sure that you don't get burnt out doing the same set of things over and over again for decades now? How do you do that?
You got good questions, Adi. You got some really good questions. I find when I'm off tour, I sort of need to, it's like recharging a battery.
Yeah.
I need to almost sometimes I'll go for maybe a month or two and I will not touch a guitar. Mm. I sort of sometimes have to get away from it. And sometimes I don't even really want to hear music. Sometimes I have to clear it out of myself, and I have to be ready for this influx of emotion and energy and everything that the music brings to me,
Yeah.
And so I look at it like recharging my batteries. My wife and I, we go out and we take walks, and we watch movies, and she cooks beautiful food for me, and we have meals together, and maybe we watch a movie and sit on the couch, and I give her a little foot massage or something. And my way of recharging is I just want to be with my family, my wife and my kids.
Speaking of movies, did you watch a recent movie that really appealed to you?
I've seen a lot of them.
But in recent times, you must have seen something that really caught your attention. Was there something like that?
Boy, I can't think right now. I mean, 2 nights ago, I rented Napoleon and watched it. I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
Thought it was okay.
Okay.
But I would have to stop here and think for about 10 minutes.
That's all right. That's all right. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Risks are something that all of us take in life, and it can be calculated risks or it can be something that is strategic, right? So career-wise, did you feel it was risky when you initially released Battle Scars after the sequence of events and the set of things that happened?
Okay, let me explain Battle Scars. After my hospital stay, you know, for those who don't know, I had a liver transplant and I was in the hospital for 8 months.
Yeah.
I lost 120 pounds. I had severe brain damage.
Oh, no.
I had to relearn how to speak. I had to relearn how to walk. I also lost the ability to play the guitar. It was wiped clean from my memory. So I had to spend over a year and teach myself the guitar all over again. And one day, my wife and my kids came to me and said, "We're really glad you're alive and we're glad you're here and we love you, but you're not fun to be around. You've been through a lot. You've been through a major trauma in your life and you are very kind of grumpy and we don't like being around you." And my wife said, "So, you know, you either need to go to a therapist and talk about the trauma you've been through." Or then she goes, "Or try writing a song about it." Okay. Ooh, she gave me an idea.
Yeah.
So I went in the back, and this is a true story. And in 2 days, I wrote 18 songs about what I had been through.
Wow.
And I wrote them just to be therapy, just to get it out. I needed to talk about what I'd been through. And I had been holding all of this stuff in, and I was not a nice guy. And so I wrote these 18 songs, and my Marie, who has managed my career wonderfully for 32 years now, said to me, "You know, these are good songs. Let's make a record." And so we made a record. I didn't do all of the songs, but that record is all about my experience in the hospital. And it starts with a song called "Almost Gone," which means I'm just about dead, which I was. And then it ends with a song called "Gonna Live Again." And so it tells the whole story, and it's graphic. It's about getting your blood tested. It's about, you know, the being in the hospital. It's about the nurses and the doctors. And so we put it out, and I actually thought to myself, you know, that is as honest as I can be in my music. And I have gotten many messages from people who said, "You know, I've been through a similar experience in the hospital, months in there," and they go, "Thank you for writing this because we can relate." And I can tell you, there was a young man who was at the Bataclan Theater in Paris when the terrorists came in and killed all those people in the terrorist attack in Paris. This young man was in the theater, and he was actually shot, and he was very, very, it was very serious, his wounds. And his stepfather or one of his parents brought in, as the kid was in the hospital, they brought in Battle Scars. And the kid got in touch with us and said, "Battle Scars gave me strength to go on. Thank you." And that to me meant more than any review, than any chart position. My music actually helped someone get through and survive a trauma. So I'm very proud of that record.
That's beautiful. And you also did mention that at some point you felt that you were not a good human being. So my question to you is, does it take to be a good human being to make good music?
No. I'm sure there's some great music which has been created by some real, not the best people out there.
Okay.
But if you're talking about the lyrics of Gonna Live Again, where I say I have the chance to be a better man and with all the indiscretions I have committed, especially back before I got sober, back when I was a drug addict and an alcoholic, I don't think I was a good person.
Okay.
But part of getting sober and part of stopping drugs and stopping alcohol is you have to take a look at yourself and you have to look in the mirror and you have to be able to say, I can live with that person I see. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of getting sober is you have to take a look at yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to try to be a better person, you know? And so that's what those lyrics are about.
Lovely. Your music also must have some inspiration from your political perspectives. So could you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know something? I'm not going to go into my political perspective. I think it's in my songs, but as I said to you earlier, when that audience is there and I'm playing a song for them and singing, mm-hmm. and they're all listening completely and they're all together.
Yeah.
At that point, it doesn't matter who they vote for. And my wife has said this to me for a long time. I should say my manager has said that music can be a force which brings people together.
Yeah.
And that's what I should focus on instead of dividing people because there's enough division in the world. Let's try to bring people together.
Yeah, I feel
music is a force for that. And
correct.
My new album, in the liner notes that I write about that. So if you see the album or the CD and you read the liners, that's what I write about, is bringing people together.
Congratulations on the new album that's coming out, I believe, on the 1st of March.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. So you're putting out an all new album this March at the age of 72 right now? You're 72?
Yes.
Yeah. So where does this journey take you now further?
I just keep doing what I've been doing. People always say to me, well, what are you going to do now? I go, well, I'm going to go out and play my songs for people. Yeah. And I'm hoping that the songs give them some joy and give them some feeling. And like I say, we bring people together for a few hours.
Yeah.
And everybody can bond over their love of the music. And for those couple hours, that room full of people becomes a community. Mm. And I love that feeling. And that's what I will continue doing until I cannot do it anymore. I just actually a little while ago spoke with my management, and she said that the label was actually wondering when I feel like making another record.
Wow.
And so I'm ready. I have a lot of songs, so I'm ready to make another record. You know,
I can't wait to hear it. Bring it on.
Well, yeah, it'll be a little while. I have to go out and play these songs right now.
Yeah. So when are you coming to India? When can I get to meet you in person and show you around my country?
I would love to come back. I've been to India 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I've played in Mumbai 3 times.
Yes, that's right.
And I had such a beautiful, beautiful experience and met so many incredible people there.
Yeah.
And it's something that is near and dear and fills up my heart to think about.
Yeah.
And, I would love to get back there. So I hope I get back and we get to meet in person.
I can't wait. I really can't wait to host you and show you down the south of India. Maybe you can also get Mary and your family along. It'll be fun.
That would be great.
Yeah. We could.
The last time I was in India, Marie and I believe my son John came and we had a wonderful, wonderful time.
Yeah. Yeah. You should totally plan that out. I'd be happy to be of some help, connect you with a couple of promoters in my country.
That would be great.
Yeah. I have a small surprise for you. I don't remember. I mean, you might probably not be able to recollect this gentleman that I'm going to show you. So he's a huge fan. In fact, I wanted to invite him on the show, but he had some other commitments. He couldn't join the show. But I'd like to play a rendition of your song that's being done by him. His name is Lal, and he plays for this band called Lal and the People. They are a blues rock band in India, and he's been carrying your musical traditions forward in this country. And
that's great.
I couldn't be happier. And show you a rendition of yours. See if you can spot this one. Lal and the People.
He sounded awesome. He was blazing away. You tell him if I get back to India, okay, I want him to come and play that song with me.
I will. I will be sure to let him know. And what do you think of the band? So we had Zion Matthew
great
on keyboard.
They sounded just great. Yeah. And he was ripping on the guitar. He really sounded awesome.
Yep. He's in fact putting out a new album very soon, and I will be sure to share some of his tracks with you. Yeah,
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah,
I'd love him to come and jam with my band. That would be fun.
That's very kind of you, and I'm sure he's going to be delighted after he hears this news. Yeah. So let's get into a little bit of your artistry now. So what has been the greatest obstacle to the realization of your internal vision? Say, for instance, you've had an idea in terms of a song that has to be written, arranged, and executed. What are some of the factors that appear to be obstacles according to you?
Maybe sometimes I can somewhat lack confidence.
Okay.
And I start feeling like, well, I don't know if that's any good. And sometimes here's an interesting thing. You talk about spiritual. Every time I'm supposed to make a record.
Yeah.
And now this record is number 31.
Mm.
I sit back and I go, okay, I have to make a record now. And I think to myself, do I have anything left to say?
Yeah.
Am I out of ideas? Can I do this again?
Yeah.
And I go through a couple of days of feeling like I can't do this again.
Mm.
I don't know what, you know. And then, Adi, I'm going to lose it here. Then I hear the voice of my mother.
Mm.
And she says, Walter, all you ever wanted to do was be a musician.
Yeah.
And you are a musician.
Yeah.
And what you do is make music. So just make some music. It's easy for you to make music. That's your gift, is making music. So instead of worrying about it, just make some music, Walter. And then I can write an entire album in a week. But I have to go through that. And then I hear her say that to me.
Interesting you mentioned about your mom. And I, from what I gathered, at the age of 10, your mom had set up a meeting, a meet and greet with Duke, the Duke Ellington Orchestra. And that's probably when you'd sort of made up your mind to go in the direction of music. So ever since, life has definitely taken so many routes and byroutes, and you were someone who's adapted to a lot of changes in life. So do you work with it with a sense of destiny, with a sense of predetermined role for you? Has life, there's another layer to the question, has life turned out to be the way you thought it would be when Walter was a 10-year-old boy?
You know something? And here's a story I haven't really told many people before. When I was in the third grade or the fourth grade, and I was maybe 10 years old, as you say, I had some good friends, and I sometimes I would say to them, I feel like I am living out a plan. I am living something I've been put here to do. Mm. And at that point, I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
But yes, I have felt that for years and years, that this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and this is why I was put here. And as far as life turning out good, first off, I feel I'm amazed that I'm still alive and very healthy, because when I was in my 20s, I was a heroin addict. I was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I spent a couple of years just running around Los Angeles doing heroin, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that I came out of that and I'm alive and I'm very healthy, I'm very strong and healthy, and I'm this old, and a lot of my friends at this age, a lot of my friends are gone. They've passed. And I talked to some of my buddies from back when, and I go, can you believe we're still here?
Yeah.
And I go, and I have a great career. Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful family. I have, I'm a team with my wife. We worked this career together. She's managed me for 32 years.
Yeah.
And any of the success I've had is really due to her hard work, because I'm playing the same way I've always played, you know. And she has gotten me to this point where I'm very successful. And I'm like, this is great. I'm in the best time of my life right now, Adi. I am so grateful to be here and so happy to be alive and to be able to make music and play to people and have a beautiful family. And we all love each other. And it's incredible, really. Right now, life is a great thing.
Marvelous, marvelous. I'm so glad that you are in a great position in terms of happiness, in terms of satisfaction, and you're content with your life. So I'm so happy to hear that from you, Walter.
No, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. There is an all new generation of blues musicians coming up globally. There are several people in different regions. You did see Lal from India. So what kind of satisfaction do you feel about the future of this musical form that you helped spawn at some point in your life?
I think the future of this music is great, man. There is an entire huge group of wonderful young musicians who are carrying this on. And there's always going to be a place for a person who plays an instrument and sings from their heart and soul. It's not always going to be about computers. There's always going to be a place for music, which is born out of the human condition and human emotions. And that's always going to be. But right now, there's a huge group of amazing young musicians. And the future of this music is great, is bright. It's going to go on. It's not going anywhere.
As you rightly said, the show must go on. And it will keep going.
Yeah. It will.
Indeed. Indeed.
It will.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your new album. So I had a couple of interesting observations. Your drummer, Michael, sort of put the idea of doing a bougie on your 31st album, Broken. So you collaborated with this young harmonica player called Will on the track Bleed. So was there a generation gap to transcend to make the collaborative work possible with someone like Will?
Well, let me tell you, I was playing in England a few years ago.
Okay.
And there was a couple of young British guys opening for me, and I was in my dressing room and I could hear them, and I heard this harmonica, and I had never heard anybody play the harmonica like that. And I'm a harmonica player. I actually played harmonica in Canned Heat for 2 years.
Yeah.
And but this young man from England, nobody plays like him. He's got power, and he's got technique, and he's got heart and soul. And there is a greater sort of spiritual aspect to his playing. You feel like it's coming from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so when we did that boogie, I thought to myself, well, I could play harmonica on it, but mm-hmm. I think I know what this song needs. This young man will take this song to a whole other level, and he did. And I thought it came out great.
With your permission, I'd like to play a sneak peek of the song for the people of India.
Destroyed and filled with doubt. Now you wanna try to love again, but you're too scared to proceed. You know to be prepared for love, you must be prepared to bleed.
So from what I gathered, the album Broken is also a deeply personal one, and it also involves your middle son, Biscuit, writing a track like Falls Apart, which is very modern when I heard it in terms of approach, arrangement, and he's done a terrific job in terms of backing vocals too. So could you comment a little bit about this father-son relation?
Okay, Biscuit is what we call non-binary. If you know what I mean by that.
Okay.
And Biscuit's born name, when Biscuit was born, their name was Michael.
Okay.
But when they were in their teenage years, they went through a lot of self-reflection, mm-hmm. and they went through realizing many things about themselves and their gender identity and things like that.
All right.
And during the pandemic, they, that is the pronoun that Biscuit
got it.
would prefer. So They made their own record here in the house during the pandemic in the garage, and they wrote all these amazing songs. Yeah. Biscuit is a monumental musical talent.
For sure.
And their song, It Falls Apart, was really about their view of the world and what they had been taught as a kid and who they were.
Mm-hmm.
But when I heard the song, I thought it went beyond that. When Biscuit was singing, I've tried so hard to find peace. It's just too difficult. Well, that is a metaphor for the world, isn't it?
For
sure. The world tries hard to find peace and just never seems to find peace.
Yeah.
And I went to Biscuit and said, I really want to do that song because I think it's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And so we've had Biscuit do the backing vocals, and Biscuit's a genius, you know? And so there is kind of a concept on this record. It starts off with a song called Broken.
Yeah.
And it finishes with a song called It Falls Apart.
Mm.
So it is a modern sound. I sort of, on the outro of the song where Biscuit is singing and I'm answering them with my guitar.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, this almost is like Pink Floyd or something, you know? And I find that song, that ending, especially, to be very emotional. It's that ending of that song, my wife says, it's a conversation between a father and his kid.
It's beautiful, you know, especially looking at your repertoire. When I heard this, it was so different. And it's great that you're encouraging new talent. Hats off to you for that.
Yeah, and I also want to do music, which is, I know that I'm considered a blues man in quotes, because that is where everything I do comes out of the blues. But I also want to expand musically. I was not afraid to do that song.
Correct.
I even did things on that song that I've never done before. My lead vocal, I doubled it, you know? And I have, in 31 albums, I have never doubled a vocal, but I did it on there.
So will we get to hear more of this in your next release as well? What are you thinking?
I hope so. I don't know. I have so many songs.
Yeah.
It's hard to choose, you know?
In the press release, while I was reading it, the song Broken also involved your perspective of what is going on in the United States. So could you comment on that?
Yes. Well, I don't think this country has ever been so divided. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, there was the Civil War. You know, we can go back there. But the polarization and the division in the United States right now is big. And so that the title Broken, even though it's a song I wrote with my wife, by the way, she contributed almost the majority of the lyrics on that song.
Mm-hmm.
It started off to be about when you're in the midst of drug addiction and mental illness problems, which I have been through. I've been in a lot of therapy and I've been a drug addict and the whole thing, and that. It's about being caught up in that and not wanting to be there. But in a larger sense, it is a metaphor for not just the United States and the division, but the world. We're in the midst of two different wars right now.
Yeah.
We have lots of division in the world. And, you know, the song, of course, is about being in the midst of drug addiction and mental illness problems, but it can also be about relationships. It can be about the struggle to survive in this world. And it's, I don't want to be broken anymore. The song is kind of a call for help. And it's not just about personal. It's a metaphor, as I said, for the world. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to relate to the lyrics of that song.
Mm. In fact, fun fact, Beth Hart is coming down to India in a couple of weeks. She's playing at the Mahindra Blues Festival on the 10th and 11th. And we can't wait to see her and a couple of other interesting guests. So we also have Dana Fuchs, we have Vanessa Collier, we have Cheryl Youngblood, and Samantha Fish, who's coming down for this wonderful festival this year.
So it's a whole festival of women.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all those people you named are great, great artists.
Yeah.
So that's like a wonderful festival. And they are all good friends of mine, too. So have a good time there. That's going to be a great gig.
Lovely. In fact, I've been trying to reach out to Beth. I really wanted to interview her, but I haven't had any luck yet. I'll have to figure a way to get to her.
Yeah, well, good luck. I can't give any of her info out. I wouldn't do that. But
yeah, that's
you
all
can
right.
reach her through her management or through the record label.
Sure, yeah. I will certainly do that. In the dynamic world of music where every beat counts, how does neglecting health influence the overall harmony of an artist's legacy?
Neglecting your health?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, there are many artists who neglect their health, and I was one of them for many years.
Yeah.
I think in order to make the best music you can, you need to be healthy. You know, it's like any other thing you attempt to do. If you're unhealthy, you're not at your peak performance. You're not at your peak of energy. So, of course, being healthy is very, very important.
Right.
And also for longevity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very lucky in that my wife, for the 33 years we've been together, has worked very hard to keep me healthy. Mm. She cooks me wonderful organic food, and I'm just very, very lucky to have her in my life.
Well, you both are definitely made for each other, and that's turned out really well in your case.
And also, she's a great songwriter.
Is it? Okay.
The song that won Song of the Year at the Blues Awards a couple of years ago, Marie was a co-writer.
Oh, wow.
And Marie was the first Danish person in history to win a blues music award in Memphis.
Incredible.
And she's three of the songs on the new album she has co-written with me, including Broken.
Lovely. You guys are a great team, indeed.
Yeah, I know.
So I'd like to come to the last part of our agenda, which is a small rapid fire. So some very interesting questions for you. Shall we get started?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. What is that one song that always makes you cry?
Alfie by Dionne Warwick.
Lovely. Great choice. On the contrary...
Can I explain why?
Yes, please. Yes, yes.
Because the lyrics of the song, I believe in love. Without true love, we just exist. And, you know, what's it all about? Is it just for the moment we live? Mm. And if life belongs only to the strong...
Yeah.
The lyrics of that, if I could sum up my feelings about life, that song does it.
Okay, got it. On the contrary, what is your favorite guilty pleasure song?
I was listening yesterday to Space Age Love Song by Flock of Seagulls.
Mm.
And it reduces me to tears.
Another interesting choice.
Yeah.
What is your favorite cuisine?
Pasta with vodka sauce with grilled shrimp. My son makes the best. My son Dylan is a chef.
Oh, wow.
And of course, the vodka is burned off, but it's in the sauce and it gives the sauce a wonderful flavor.
Okay.
And then Dylan grills the shrimp and it's a wonderful, wonderful dish.
Definitely sounds delicious. So is there a personal myth about you that you'd like people to shed?
Oh, boy. A personal myth. I've been accused by many, many music critics of all I do is come out and play 1,000 notes. And I even make jokes about it. You know, okay. A guy plays too many notes. And I want them to do something like listen to Marie's Mood, which is an instrumental, or listen to the guitar solo on a song of mine called Song for a Wanderer. Okay. You listen to those solos and tell me there's too many notes.
If you had to pick two all-time favorite albums that you'd like to recommend to for anyone, what would they be?
I would say the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, which is his second album, which is what really made me want to play the guitar.
All right.
And he has songs on there like Blowing in the Wind and Hard Rains Are Gonna Fall and Masters of War. And when I was 12 years old or 11 years old and that album came out, it was monumental.
Okay.
And to this day, it still is. I even covered Girl from the North Country on one of my records. The other album I would say would be the first album by the Paul Butterfield Blues Band with the song Born in Chicago, because I feel like on that album, those guys are inventing blues rock. They're playing blues, and that was from 1965, and nothing sounded like that then. And they're playing blues, but they're doing it with this rock and roll aggression and fire. And it was astounding, and it still is to me. I still listen to it all the time.
Incredible. If you had to describe your experience being on my interview, how would you describe it?
Man, I think you have asked wonderful, insightful questions, and also questions that I have never been asked before. So that is a pleasure, because I've done many, many interviews. And a lot of them, they ask me the same questions, and I have the same answer that I give over and over. And you've asked me all these questions that I have never been asked before, and you have really made me go into myself and think and try to answer these questions as honestly as possible. So you're really, really a great interviewer, Adi, and I have enjoyed being on here. And we're happy to come back on here anytime you want.
Means a lot coming from you. I think that's the greatest compliment, and you've made my day saying so. So I have one last question for you today. Down in the distant horizon, what would you like to be remembered as?
Just a musician who did his best to be honest and be truthful.
Okay.
And be expressing himself.
Incredible. Great
That's
answer.
All. Just a musician, man.
Great answer for a closure. This interview will be additionally aired on Big FM Shillong and Aizawl, two incredible radio stations in the northeastern part of India. And it'll also be out on my YouTube channel, Aditya Veera 1994. Where I have an incredible catalog of artists who featured on my show. We've done over 120 interviews so far, and we've come to an all new season. So this season has been incredible. We started with our first interview with Mr. Steve Moss, and then we had Scott Henderson, then we had Simon Phillips, and then we have Mr. Walter Trout.
Oh, well, I'm honored to be here. Those are all amazing, amazing artists you just mentioned.
Please do stay in touch. I would love to keep in touch with you, and I would love to sort of get you opportunities in the country as well. It was lovely interacting with you. It's been such an incredible blessing, honor, and a privilege, Walter. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Oh, you've been great, Adi. And again, thank you for having me on your show. This has been a real pleasure for me. And I would love to come back to India and play for those beautiful people, because I had a wonderful experience the three times that I have been there.
Marvelous. Can't wait for it. Take care of your health. Take care of your family. put out more music and have a great day ahead.
Yeah, you too, Adi. Thank you. And
Alrighty.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.